Bitcoin's time chain is one of the most transparent financial systems ever built, but most people have no idea how to read it. Today, new hedge founder Alon breaks down how on-chain data is changing the game for Bitcoin investors and institutions alike. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. As a reminder, all of our content is for educational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. If you enjoy what we're producing, please remember to subscribe, comment, and share, as this all helps us greatly.
This isn't for everyone. It's for the ones who know the old system is broken and are ready to build something that lasts. Welcome to the Build with Bitcoin podcast.
I'm co-host Israel Munoz, joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow. Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming Alon, founder of New Hedge. First of all, welcome, Alon. We're excited to get into today's conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So let's get into a little bit of your background, Alon. We were just coming out of the conversation before we recorded, you mentioning that you came from the outside and have now built two successful Bitcoin companies so far. What's that backstory? What got you into Bitcoin? What was the first company and what led you to New Hedge?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I actually got introduced to Bitcoin initially in 2014. Like most people who got introduced to Bitcoin at around that time, you don't really know what you're talking about. There wasn't too much information. Not many books were really written. So it was just heavy, you know, Bitcoin talk forums and just trying to understand what's going on. And then, kind of forgot about it. And then 2017 came around and we saw this amazing run up and I joined the hype with everyone else, remembering what Bitcoin was when I first heard about it. I fell down the rabbit hole in 2017. So came from that class at around 2018. This is kind of when already the hype cycle, that cycle collapsed already. And, you know, people were kind of picking up the pieces, trying to understand what happened, what Bitcoin is, what's its like, inclusion in the broader financial system. I wanted to kind of join the Bitcoin space and see what I could do. So I ended up building my first company, which was called Bearer.com. It's not a site that a lot of deep in the weeds Bitcoin people know, but it was geared towards newbies that were basically searching very simple Bitcoin terms on Google. How to buy Bitcoin? What is a cold wallet? So what's a hardware wallet? All these kind of like basic terms that Bitcoiners already have known for a decade plus now. Yeah, that site was an educational platform that ended up becoming really, really big. We were, we became partners with Coinbase and Kraken, Ledger, CoinKite, sending traffic to all these amazing kind of Bitcoin companies to help newbies join the space. And that site still runs today. I think most people now get their information from AI. So hopefully the crawlers have used our data to kind of help people on their journey now, kind of passing it off to the LLMs. But that was my first step into the Bitcoin space, was just kind of figuring out how can I help?
And then at what point, what was the year of the transition where you started to kind of wake up to this opportunity of building essentially a Bloomberg terminal for Bitcoin on-chain analytics?
Yeah, so I never, with both of my businesses, and I'll talk about New Hedge a little bit later, I never kind of assumed that these would be businesses. I never looked at them as like that. I was always working for another company, just kind of building stuff on the side. Bearer ended up becoming a company where we were hire writers and hire, it became this kind of like almost very small media company of us kind of creating content and all this kind of stuff. And it was working very, very well. It was around actually exactly when Michael Saylor bought his first Bitcoin on behalf of MicroStrategy's balance sheet in 2020. I want to say March 2020 is when that happened. And that was around the same time that COVID hysteria was starting. And we all kind of, whether you're in Bitcoin or not, knew that the world was going to change some way, whether that was, the money that was about to be printed or the restrictions that were about to be handed out to citizens around the world. And I just kind of thought that, Michael Saylor, him sitting and buying $250 million worth of Bitcoin on behalf of his company's balance sheet, what was he looking at? Obviously now we have, a wealth of knowledge of understanding what his thought process was. And, he read Saifedean's, the Bitcoin standard and all that stuff. But, he had to have some kind of Bloomberg terminal-esque to kind of figure out, what's the circulating supply. Long-term holders hold X amount compared to short-term holders, like all these kind of metrics that we know and on-chain now. And there was definitely sites out there that were kind of presenting this data, but it was, if you look back in like web archive, it was really literally just websites. It was very like basic HTML, very shitty charts kind of presenting this mempool data and all this kind of stuff. And I just kind of decided like, wow, you know, if Bitcoin is going to be, you know, the base of the next financial system, you know, the Bloomberg Terminal has Bitcoin data now, but it's kind of like, you know, 0.01% of the offering that Bloomberg Terminal gets. I kind of thought, you know, what if we take that 0.01% and just make it the 99.9%? Like this is how people like Michael Saylor in the future will be looking at the financial systems through the kind of Bitcoin first lens and then everything else. And then that's when I started building NewHedge, which was kind of taking the bit or kind of like retail focused educational model, but just upping it up a little bit and creating this, you know, really kind of like project that I didn't know how intense would it would be. You know, we started with taking Bitcoin's blockchain, converting it to a SQL database to allow us to query addresses and UTXOs. And it became this big project that now is, you know, it's a trope that people use, you know, Bloomberg Terminal for crypto or Bloomberg Terminal for meme stocks but that's what I like to call it, is like the Bloomberg Terminal for Bitcoin. And I think a lot of our customers, whether they're retail or institutional, use it for that purpose. It's kind of their, you know, wake up in the morning, hit NewHedge. That's their Bloomberg Terminal for the day to see what's happening, whether it's news, on-chain analysis, market derivatives data, exchange trading volume, what have you, address balances. It's become kind of like the... Well, what I like to say is kind of like the home of Bitcoin data.
Alon, did you have a background in financial analytics? What made you want to put this together? Were you missing some of the analytics that it made it harder to find? And how did you select what metrics you put into NewHedge?
Yeah, so I actually come from a web development SEO background. So I was more on kind of like the front end marketing side of companies that I would work for, never on the heavy back end data, you know, database side of the business. But one of the reasons was, just like with anything, is that if you listen to founders starting businesses, obviously they're trying to solve a problem for something, but it's usually like a problem that they have questions for themselves in their head. Is like, you know, how do people do this? You know, if I wanted to do this, what would I do? And then it kind of, outside of your, you know, immediate bubble, you start growing to kind of the larger world. You know, you'd look at an on-chain metric, very basic one, and just be like, okay, you know, they're getting the data from the Bitcoin blockchain. That's public and available to everyone. You know, what did they do? What query did they run? What algorithm? What kind of method did they get to get this information from? You know, if you've seen a blockchain, just these UTXOs, you can go on mempool.space and just, you see these transactions and these UTXOs. And it just always kind of piqued my interest of, you know, this data is available to anyone who wants to see it. Let's create some metrics out of it. So I didn't come from a data background. Now, obviously, we have data scientists helping us out, presenting a lot of these on-chain metrics that we have. But in the beginning, it was just to see if I could do it myself. It was less of this is a background that I have, so this is easy for me to do. It's actually very hard for me to do. But I answered a lot of my own questions about how the Bitcoin blockchain works, which, you know, with my first company, BitRAR, you know, when I was first explaining the difference between a hot wallet and a cold wallet, I also didn't know, you know, the technicalities of how this all works. But once you start reading about it and writing it and presenting it to other people, you start understanding this knowledge that you yourself didn't have before. And I think that's a beautiful thing about the Bitcoin community as well, is a lot of people came outside of economics, outside of finance, outside of these, you know, outside of these kind of circles, and then they all kind of meet together in the middle with Bitcoin.
For someone who's just new and curious to learn more about this, and power of tools like what you've built at NewHedge, which I'm a NewHedge user, and I've told you, Alon, you've built a great product. It's very well Thank done, you. Very professional. But yeah, in the early days, I mean, you were just looking at this like static, you know, I don't know, I'm thinking maybe looking at a static chart from CoinDesk or something like that, right? And trying to make sense of the Bitcoin fundamentals and adoption story based on, you know, just such limited data compared to what we have now. One thing before we get into a little more of the weeds here that I want to address, in Washington, Wall Street, and we know that as well, you know, broadly in retail, there's still one category, which is crypto. Bitcoin is thrown into the same bucket as all these other, you know, tokens. Just very briefly and succinctly, I mean, why Bitcoin only? Did you get more pushback in the beginning compared to now? Have you seen that change? What's your message there?
Yeah, so, you know, when I came in 2017, Bitcoin was you know, everyone knew that as kind of like the king of crypto, but I was also kind of, you know, exposed to Ethereum and all these other projects that were happening at the time. And, you know, someone who's coming from an outsider's perspective, not understanding the technology or economics or finance, the financial terms that's happening in the crypto space, I was obviously very interested to see what was happening. And then just like with any other Bitcoiner that kind of understands, you know, the value proposition that Bitcoin's going after, you start looking at these other projects in kind of lesser light, meaning that, you know, if they're doing something interesting, that's very cool for them. But Bitcoin is playing in a completely different field. It's playing for sound money for the world. And a project like Ethereum now can be maybe compared to a low tier AWS that won't replace AWS, which is still interesting in its own right, but just we're just on completely different playing fields. And I think that I was actually very happy to understand that relatively early in my journey diving into Bitcoin. Obviously delved into books just like Saifedean's Bitcoin Standard, which I think is a really good kind of overall introduction into why Bitcoin and not crypto. But in terms of like the business, obviously like the business, I wanted to be Bitcoin focused. That's where my passion is. That's where a lot of kind of like the clients and the users of our platform are also mostly interested in Bitcoin, Bitcoin only metrics. But it was a little bit hard because during that kind of 2020 to 2024, you know, cycle of crypto and NFTs and DeFi and stuff, I was actually seeing a lot of crypto analytics firm raising a lot of money. And that's because they were kind of going for the wider crypto analytics. I don't know if I need to name names. I'm sure we know a lot of these kind of crypto data analytics firms, but they were kind of going for the wide. You know, at that time, New Hedge raised in 2022. And we did have some investors that kind of said like, you know, you're starting with Bitcoin, but, you know, we see that as kind of like a small fraction of this big crypto world. You know, how do you see yourself being a successful business if you're focusing on the fraction of the larger pie? Whereas why not just go for the larger pie? And what I would tell them is that I actually think that they raise a lot of money. These crypto analytics firms, they raise a lot of money. They're deploying capital to now be, you know, compatible with Solana and all these different other blockchains, whether they're EVM compatible or not. And they're starting to, you know, send their data analysts down this path of trying to figure out what's happening in the data world of, you know, these different blockchains and different cryptos. Yet when the hype kind of leaves and the VC money dries up, there's really not much data. There's not much interesting data to look at in the beginning. So I kind of told my investors, like, once this hype cycle dies down and nobody uses Avalanche or Algorand or all these other projects that I have no idea why anybody would use those in the first place, the crypto analytics for that, it becomes really hard to find a buyer for that kind of data. And back then I got a little bit of pushback, but now that, you know, we're here sitting after that whole cycle has kind of collapsed, it seems like the only people, if you go on CNBC or you go on the kind of like the Wall Street talking circles, it seems like Bitcoin is the only thing that has staying power. Everything else completely collapsed. And with these other crypto analytics firms, I really don't know who the buyer is of, you know, on-chain Algorand data.
Well, I mean, now might be a good time to dive a little bit deeper into exactly what New Hedge is, what sort of services you provide, the types of data pertaining to Bitcoin that you feel are most important or that your clients feel are most valuable.
Lynn and I are partners at Baselayer Advisors, where we use our network of venture capital partners and startup founders to connect investors with unique opportunities within the Bitcoin innovation space. Alongside this, we help startup founders with their growth and fundraising. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more.
For them.
Yeah, so I'm sure a lot of users have seen price charts, futures open interest, a lot of these kind of market charts that kind of, you know, traders would kind of use to figure out what's happening in Bitcoin price. But what we really wanted to do is take it from like a very first principles of like, what is Bitcoin? So we started with creating tools that a lot of other companies, if they weren't Bitcoin focused, they would completely miss. So one of our first things that we wanted to do is like, there's, you know, obviously every 2016 blocks, there's a difficulty adjustment in Bitcoin. And I was really into kind of like the whole Bitcoin mining and energy debate and topic in Bitcoin. So we decided to say, okay, you know, how about we create a difficulty estimator, which would in real time just estimate the next difficulty adjustment in Bitcoin. And then see if miners like it. See if like if Mara or, you know, any Foundry, any of these kind of people would like to look at this kind of data. So we ended up creating something like that, visualizing it very, very well. And then we kind of sent it out to a couple of miners and it became really, really popular. And to this day, people use it. We decided that there's like this famous script going around where you can extract IP locations of different nodes that were connected to each other. And you can create this kind of geographical map understanding where nodes are. And, you know, the China mining ban in 2021, while we were kind of like running this data, you see all of a sudden the drop in nodes in China. And then you see in Kazakhstan and other countries, it starts rising up. And then you kind of can start gaining a picture that maybe this is where the hash rate is going as well. And so it was really interesting data that I didn't see a lot of people in Bitcoin were really interested in talking about this stuff, but we really wanted to kind of present them the data. So it came from me just asking a lot of questions of just, you know, like all these ASICs from China, where they're going. Well, let's, you know, create the script, see where these connected nodes are connecting from, extract their IP, and see if we can put them on a, you know, 3D map to, you know, give Bitcoiners an understanding of where they're geographically located. So a lot of the metrics are very unconventional, very not what you would expect from like a crypto analytics firm that's just showing you active addresses or daily transaction volume. That was all very interesting and actually very simple data that, you know, anybody who's running a node can set up themselves as well. But we wanted to get really, really, really deep into Bitcoin because obviously Bitcoin is not just an asset. It's not just an investment. It's a money. People use it. So there's so much data for us to get into. And it was just fun to just attack each sector one by one. On-chain, long-term holders, short-term holders, market derivatives data, mining data, hash rate, hash price, all these amazing metrics.
One of the things I appreciate so much about New Hedge is that you're not just providing the data itself, but then you also have an educational component to it. So if you click on nodes to your example, you know, for someone who's less familiar with what a node is and how they operate, it's like you give that explanation, and same thing with mining and same thing with. So I love that about it. So it allows you to kind of explore and learn while you're about Bitcoin while you're looking at the actual metrics.
Yeah, exactly. I think that a lot of Bitcoiners, and I've met a couple of like very OG Bitcoiners, rightfully so, they've been in the space for so long, but they kind of have this kind of Michael Saylor sigh when they have to explain something about Bitcoin that's so clear in their head, but not clear to anyone else. So yeah, I thought one of the reasons that my first company, Bearer, did so well is that I'm just meeting the user where they're at. I'm expecting you not to know a lot about Bitcoin, and that's all completely okay. Whereas I feel like a lot of the Bitcoin community loves to kind of have this, you know, small circle attitude of like, you know, of course you should have known this. It was always like this. So a lot of the data that we show is very unconventional and very deep in the weeds. So we like to explain it as if you're, you know, as if you're like a new user to Bloomberg Terminal. I'm not expecting you to know what, you know, a long short ratio is, but we'll explain it to you.
Alan, I mean, tell me if you think about it differently, but simplifying it, I kind of look at your platform and I see kind of two categories, the core metrics of Bitcoin, the network itself, right? So that's, for me at least, how I can get a real good fundamental snapshot of where Bitcoin stands, you know, the adoption, the miners, all of these things, you know, wallets. And then you have the non-on-chain data, which is, in my mind, just how it, you know, Bitcoin, the network, is actually interacting with the rest of the financial right. markets and the world, let's say. The on-chain metrics are a new concept for many people, I would say, just looking into Bitcoin. Can we get into, I mean, from your point of view, why this is so important to understand? I mean, to me, it's the real value story, right? I mean, that's when you hear people say, you know, oh, what are Bitcoin's fundamentals, or where's its intrinsic value and real use case? I mean, to me, on-chain data is screaming, you know, product market fit. But I'd love to get your take on why maybe more people should be paying attention to on-chain data.
Yeah, sure. Like, I'd love to preface that, like, obviously with any kind of like a very niche metric set or data set, it can turn into pseudoscience if you want it to. But there is very basic, powerful on-chain data because, again, everything in Bitcoin is public and open for people to understand who's transacting, where they're transacting, when they're transacting. And you can overlay that with price to start kind of getting a picture of, you know, who are these people that are using Bitcoin for kind of monetary purposes. So I love on-chain data. And I think, you know, regardless of price, it shows what I like to call just like adoption metrics. It's like it literally, on-chain data is adoption metrics. This is how people are adopting Bitcoin. And, you know, there was like this I think that happened in 2024, 2023. There was like this big article that came out. It was either by CNBC or FT about how Bitcoin transacted volume that year surpassed Visa's network. And that's very basic on-chain data. You're looking at every single transaction, the size, looking at the price that it transacted at, and then you're adding that up, and then you're looking and you're saying, wow, Bitcoin itself is just the monetary asset being transacted is already on the scale of like a Visa, meaning that it's transacting trillions of dollars of monetary economic activity. So that's crazy. And you can see that all on chain. So what I like to look at is a lot of kind of like long-term holder trends, short-term holder. Those are kind of ones that kind of impact the price a little bit more. There's a famous metric called HODL waves, which is just looking at different bands of users, whether they're, you know, been holding Bitcoin for 12 plus years or 10 years, 5 to 7 years, less than 1 year. And you can see their activity of how active those addresses are and the coins that are held within those addresses. So that kind of gives you a picture in the short term. Obviously, if the market, kind of like the price dynamics are being shifted by long-term holders, or if the price is kind of being set by retail acquiring a lot of these coins. Obviously, right now, because of Bitcoin treasury companies, we're seeing a lot of kind of OTC transactions that we're not able to see, but they're happening on paper. That's kind of locking away a lot of the supply into long-term holders. But there's a lot of really, really basic on-chain metrics, like looking at those kind of like HODL waves, for instance, to just gain a picture of kind of the distribution of Bitcoin and what kind of people are holding Bitcoin.
You must have seen a lot of changes in your data in the last couple of years since the advent of the ETFs and the acceleration in public companies holding Bitcoin treasury like Strategy and others. How did you adapt to those changes in holders of Bitcoin?
Yeah, it was actually interesting because I actually thought that was when my thesis on why Bloomberg Terminal with Bitcoin as kind of like the basic fundamental unit of account kind of made sense. Whereas like, you know, these Bitcoin treasury companies are looking at this Bitcoin data, and a lot of new Bitcoin metrics came out of Bitcoin treasury companies adopting Bitcoin on their balance sheet as like MNAV, for instance. That was literally a term that did not exist, you know, 2 years ago, I think. I think even when Michael Saylor first bought, it wasn't really because, you know, they bought $250 million out of this larger company. Nobody was really tracking MNAV back then. So then all of a sudden, I'm like, these Bitcoin native metrics are literally being born in real time, merging into traditional finance. And something like a Bloomberg Terminal wouldn't have MNAV as one of their kind of basic metrics to look at these, you know, 150 plus companies that have Bitcoin on their balance sheet now. Yet we're primed to present that data. We are the Bitcoin Terminal. So it was an interesting mix of, you know, TradFi and Bitcoin data analytics that kind of came together, which kind of, yeah, made me kind of feel happy that my direction of what I wanted NewHedge as a Bitcoin analytics platform to be kind of, you're watching Bitcoin metrics being born in real time and we're adopting them.
From your lens, Alan, I mean, what's the data showing you as far as this new institutional wave? Are they long-term holders? Are they going through their own, you know, learning curves and taking losses? What's the take from you guys' view?
Yeah, so obviously we're tracking every single publicly traded company and private company that's, you know, that has Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And obviously we see Tesla buying, Tesla selling, and it's kind of across the board. You're kind of like seeing a lot of the balance sheet shifting around as the price kind of fluctuates. But what's interesting is less on the actual data, but more on the people who are actually like using the terminal, is that as the price starts coming down and maybe balance sheets, MNAV starts going under, you know, the cost basis of when these companies have bought, but we're actually seeing a lot of signups from, you know, people that I wouldn't have expected to be looking at that data, like JP Morgan or Morgan Stanley, UBS. I'm looking as like these signups are kind of, as we kind of merged with like Bitcoin data analytics and traditional finance, you're actually seeing that those kind of, you know, kind of more institutional TradFi are joining the platform to actually look at that data to see what those companies are doing as the price is fluctuating, looking at the on-chain data. So, you know, I can't speak too much as kind of like what a CFO would be doing in this position. I've spoken to some, you know, Bitcoin treasury companies, and I'm sure this isn't, you know, this isn't the sunniest of days for them. They still have investors and, you know, debt and shares to sell. But when you have kind of like a long-term outlook on Bitcoin, like they do and like we do, price fluctuations are less of like a red alarm. It's nothing too integral to the actual, you know, just like as a Bitcoiner would say, you know, the price is down, but none of the Bitcoin fundamentals have changed. And we're seeing, you know, just last week, I think Michael Saylor just bought another, I think it was $90 million purchase. So long-term holders will always be here. And it's, I believed, you know, initially in this kind of like supply shock economics, where at a certain point, so much Bitcoin will be held with these long-term holders that have this kind of very long-term outlook on Bitcoin, that it's going to be very interesting once people realize that they do need Bitcoin for themselves, not just these large asset managers or companies. So I still think that that's in play regardless of price.
I'd love to hear about just talking about institutional adoption of New Hedge and how institutions are coming to find you. You must be able to tell a little bit about what their business plans are, even by how they're using their data. But what are you seeing the most popular use cases are from your institutional level clients?
Yeah. So essentially, we kind of have kind of a wide variety of institutional clients, and each one kind of uses the data for their own purpose. But so we have kind of like miners that use us. We have some partnerships with some other kind of institutions that are using kind of it for more trading purposes, more kind of like crypto native hedge funds that are using this data to kind of get a bigger picture of the rest of the crypto market, because Bitcoin is kind of like the leader in the space and they're using that as kind of alpha for what's going to happen with the rest of the market. So there's a lot of different ways to use the data. It's essentially just to, you know, without getting too deep into the weeds, into the data, and just kind of having a more macro photo of kind of what's going on, it's just kind of exactly what Bitcoiners knew what would happen, is that, you know, you can ignore it until you can't. And that's why I think that eventually Bitcoin is going to be facing you and, the, you know, staring at you, and you're going to have to understand why people are adopting it and why people are looking at this data. And that's, I think, where we kind of meet them.
And in your client mix, how are you between retail clients and institutional clients, and what trends are you seeing? I mean, probably you started with retail and now more institutions are adopting, but I'm just guessing on that.
Yeah, no, you guessed right. We definitely started with retail. I think just because I come from kind of like the retail background, looking into Bitcoin, I definitely, you know, most of the supply of Bitcoin is being held by retail, regardless of ETF holdings and Bitcoin treasury holdings. I think a good 70% of the supply is being held by holders that have held longer than 5 years, and it's mostly in the retail space before the ETFs, before the treasury companies got into the picture. So there will always be a retail offering. I think it's less of like the Bloomberg terminal outlook, where to use a Bloomberg terminal, you have to be some, you know, investment bank or some high net worth, and, you know, family fund or family office. I think Bitcoin will always have that kind of retail offering, because it's money for the people. So we will always have that offering available to people. And that's how we started. That's how I actually, you know, encourage people like ourselves to you know, digest this data the same way that that in a family office or a high net worth individual would use this data for. But I think we're just in the beginning of understanding what this data can be used for in the traditional financial space, just on even very simple metrics of transaction volumes, US dollar value exceeding or matching that of Visa. Just kind of shows you that this network is not dying. If anything, these are all adoption metrics here are just pointing in the obvious direction that Bitcoin will be adopted at a certain point.
Others may relate to this, but you start to learn about Bitcoin, and once it clicks, You of course just see the massive opportunity. You get very excited. Of course, you know, you devote a lot of your time, energy into this, perhaps, you know, devote a lot of your investment capital into this. And at one point you have to try to question yourself. Maybe I'm off, right? I mean, maybe like there must be some things I'm not seeing. And all what I'm getting to is what I have enjoyed New Hedge most in the early days of when I was exploring your platform was trying to punch holes into my own arguments. There's just so many adoption metrics. I mean, to your point, on-chain equals adoption metrics. It, for better or worse, only strengthens my conviction every time I dig into it. So now I try to do it periodically only. 'Cause it,
100%. 100%. And I always try to tell people, because, you know, obviously on-chain, there's kind of like a funnel of like how deep the data can go. And you can get into these really complicated on-chain metrics that you have to really understand. a couple of things that kind of smashed together to get this kind of metric. But I like to tell people in the very, very beginning, just how I was starting out in Bitcoin, is that you start from the very, very basic and then you work your way down. So for instance, do you remember there was like the big FUD in 2021 that China banned mining, and this would take the network into this, you know, mining death spiral and all these kind of things. And then you'd look at a very, very, very simple metric, just network difficulty and hash rate, and you would just see it reach all-time highs every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, it was just trending upward. And obviously, there's debates, you know, whether hash rate precedes price or follows price. I'm less in those debates, but everything was showing that, you know, miners were plugging in. They could care less about the ban or the price impact that the ban happened. They were plugging in. They were, you know, their unit economics for electricity, regardless, they were bullish on Bitcoin. And you'd see that kind of in the most basic of Bitcoin metrics.
You guys have very robust data. And I guess maybe stepping back a little bit, Alon, you as a founder, how do you think through competition? I mean, whether it's from other on-chain providers like a Glassnode or from a traditional player like Bloomberg, or, you know, how do you think about AI in this broader data analytics space? Yeah, where, you know, can you give us a little bit of your, you know, founder mindset?
Yeah, sure. With any other founder of like a startup, you know, everyone knows that the highs are very high and the lows are extremely low. It's, and your mood and your outlook on the business just tries to find balance between those two, because obviously like competitors are well capitalized. They've been around for a long time. You know, they're also kind of targeting the same kind of users as you are. And I really respect the competition out there. But you try to kind of wedge your way in and try to find your niche and try to find why your product needs to exist in the world and why anybody would pay for it and, you know, who it gives value to. And similarly to kind of what I saw with the crypto analytics firms is that there was a time and a place where, you know, you can sell crypto data to, it was mostly like trading firms, hedge funds, those kind of, and they were using that data to trade these meme coins. And that was kind of like a blip in time. And now, you know, now it's kind of all gone. So what I like to think is that, you know, if Bitcoin is going to be around here for a long time and you have a founder who's dedicating, you know, his time and capital into building a Bloomberg terminal for Bitcoin, then, you know, if the thesis for Bitcoin is correct, hopefully, you know, we can ride alongside that and we don't have to, you know, think of ourselves as some kind of like a 0-to-1 Peter Thiel kind of company that, you know, completely changes the world. Bitcoin is going to change the world and we just want to tag along for the ride. So I don't like to think of our business as some world-changing product. I think it gives users value to those that want it. We're launching an API and it's something that people have been waiting for a long time. So we will be increasing our user base and our revenue to the clients that need this data for their own purposes. In terms of AI, I think it's really interesting because the nature of blockchain is just open and public in general. And, you know, in the beginning, I said there's a lot of these metrics that a user themselves can run a node and query themselves, which I encourage a lot of people to do. You know, we're definitely not gatekeeping this data for our own purposes, just for the purpose of selling it. I think a good portion of the data that people want can be seen freely just by running a node. There's a lot of open source projects which also allow you to see some really cool, very basic on-chain metrics that you can run from your node as well. But I think AI will be able to at a certain point try to come up with these metrics as well to kind of give a better outlook as it kind of ingests the Bitcoin blockchain, which is, you know, I'll tell you, from converting the Bitcoin blockchain to a SQL database, those are billions and billions and billions of rows. And each SQL query takes us quite a while and it's very expensive to run. So, you know, we do have kind of a bit of a jump on AI. It's going to take a lot of compute to get to where we are. But, you know, I just like with anything, being in the Bitcoin space and being a libertarian free market capitalist, I'm open to competition, open to good AI coming in and seeing if they can either help out with running some of these queries or creating some new metrics. But in general, like, I think most of the conversations that I've had with people that are users of NewHedge is that just like, you know, an investment banker will walk in and on Monday open up his workstation, and Bloomberg Terminal is just inevitably what the workstation is. I see the future being for the kind of Bitcoin world is to use something like NewHedge. So I think there'll always be a space for us.
Kind of pulling on that thread a little bit more, how do you think about the future? What is your roadmap for what you want to build or how you want to evolve it? I mean, taking into consideration that AI is changing things rapidly, how do you as a CEO think about continuing to add value above and beyond what you can get, you know, in alternate locations? And what kind of things are you thinking about right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my roadmap never kind of changed from the thesis of we're going to understand everything in Bitcoin, whether this unconventional metrics or very popular metrics that are kind of more market driven for trading firms. But there's a lot more to do in terms of understanding Bitcoin. I think we're still very early. We're very early in the Bitcoin space in general. A lot of people think that, you know, every single time that there's an all-time high, people think that, okay, this is it. We've reached the top. There's not much more for us to do here. You know, inevitably, we know that Bitcoin is going to be, you know, this world-changing monetary system. So there's endless amounts of work for us to do in terms of what our clients are asking for in terms of the Bitcoin data. For instance, I can tell you, Bitcoin is being used by sanctioned countries to get around sanctions. So for instance, Iran is heavily sanctioned by the U.S. There's other kind of like organizations that are deemed by the U.S. to be terrorist organizations that are inevitably either they're using Bitcoin now or inevitably will use Bitcoin. And that's just kind of like the nature of open source money where anybody can use it for their own purposes and transfer value across the internet. And what's interesting about that is that regardless of how governments view Bitcoin or regulations that happen, bad actors, good actors will all be using this. And that kind of pushes towards the, whether we like it or not, the negative or positive adoption of Bitcoin. And that puts more pressure on people like us to uncover more insights from the on-chain and do more entity tracking. Like a lot of people with MicroStrategy, you know, Michael Saylor obviously gave his opinion as to why he's not publishing the addresses and the addresses that are holding the Bitcoin. And I understand his explanation for security purposes. And, you know, it's, I don't know if actually the Bitcoin community was very happy about his answer, but there is ways to, even if it's an OTC transaction, there is ways to kind of inevitably see where the Bitcoin is being held and to maybe front run an SEC, you know, an SEC report of a sale or something like that. So there's a lot of things to uncover from Bitcoin. And I think whether it's to the positive or to the negative detriment of Bitcoin, everything is happening on chain, available for anyone to see.
What would success look to you in terms of user growth or institutional adoption? I mean, what is your go-to-market strategy?
My go-to-market strategy is organic inbound. We do zero marketing. We have never had a booth in even a Bitcoin conference. I think I really do believe, and this could be kind of like a founder's dilemma, but you know, a lot of people say, you know, I'll build it and then they'll come, which is kind of like a fallacy, right? If you build a good enough product, they will come. Obviously, you need to do a lot of kind of customer interactions to know if the product that you're building is for those people that you want to come. But because we've done enough of those kind of like sit downs with big and small companies, high net worth individuals using Bitcoin, speaking with other crypto analytics firms for what kind of data they sell and what customers like, we've done enough kind of research to know that a product like this deserves to be alive, deserves to be in conversation as to the Bitcoin kind of data and crypto analytics space. And I forgot the question, actually. Where were we?
Institutional adoption, like how do you... Are you
institutional how, adoption, right.
Yeah, or adoption by retail, which I'm so happy that you are devoted to the
right.
Retail client too.
Yeah, it was actually very interesting because in the beginning, you know, the Bitcoin space is actually very tiny. So even if you're speaking to kind of like hedge funds that are allocating money to Bitcoin or family offices or trading firms, you get through them actually pretty quick. You can get through them pretty quick because there's just a slight handful of them. So once you kind of reach them and you understand their pain points and what kind of data that they want and, you know, build for them and help them out with their strategies, the only actual adoption in this kind of business is when outsiders of Bitcoin start coming in. And that's what I was kind of like alluding to earlier, is when these kind of investment banks and these kind of like really well-known old TradFi companies start coming in, start accessing the data, start pinging the API for their own purposes, start going on calls with me to kind of understand where this data is coming from, how we're sourcing it. And, you know, we kind of have those kind of discovery calls. Then you start realizing, okay, well, this wasn't exactly my target audience. They would have been an amazing customer, but it's kind of a pipe dream, you know? And here they are coming to us. Everything has been organic inbound, which has been kind of like a blessing, but also, guys, you know, goes to show that we did enough kind of premedial kind of like research in the beginning to kind of understand, you know, what kind of offerings they would like.
Yeah, I mean, speaks to the product. That's fantastic to hear, Alan. And I'm curious, we could perhaps, you know, have you show us on the screen, at least for our yeah, visual sure. listeners, what if we can go through, you know, maybe, I don't know, your most looked at metric on the retail side and maybe the same for the institutional side, just to get a feel of the platform.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll share my screen over here and we can just go through a run through.
We'll try to describe what we're viewing here for the audio only.
Okay. I think I'm sharing the New Hedge homepage. So unfortunately, we're looking at a price that's not the sexiest price, but, you know, we display it right there on front. And as you can see, we are trusted by a lot of well-known companies. They've used our data in their own research and their own analysis. So what I like to do is, because I'm, like I said, I'd love to keep this open to retail, you can actually launch the terminal, our main dashboard, without even signing up, without even registering. And this is kind of what the main workstation looks like. So what we see here in kind of like the main quadrant is just the live price in real time changing, which you can change to any currency that you want, as well as metals, you know, pricing it in gold or silver and almost every single currency. Here we kind of do a sentiment analysis on news, whether that's macro news, Bitcoin news, to kind of give people a understanding of what's being talked about right now as the news comes in and kind of affects the price. Research from some of the biggest Bitcoin firms that are kind of talking about what's happening on chain and different kind of like analysis. And once we get into here, this is kind of like the bread and butter of what New Hedge offers, is just an insane wealth of data on what's happening with Bitcoin. Each one of these is kind of like opens up into a story of their own. But for instance, like, let's get into, for instance, we were talking about Bitcoin treasury companies. That's kind of like the hot topic, maybe cooled off a little bit, but you can come into here. And here we're looking at publicly traded private companies and entities that are holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So here we're just giving a insane amounts of wealth of data on each of these companies. Here you kind of see a tree map of where the kind of Bitcoin is distributed amongst, whether they're ETF holders, publicly traded private companies or funds. You can go into, for instance, a company like Strategy. And because we're obviously Bitcoin first, we're pricing their stock in BTC. So you can see their returns against BTC in Bitcoin terms. We're looking at their holdings over time, purchases, price action against Bitcoin, their balance sheet, just an insane wealth amount of data, insider transactions, institutional holders and funds. And we're doing this obviously for every single one of the companies. But when it comes to kind of like the unconventional metrics that I'm actually more obsessed with, when I was talking about the difficulty estimator, so I'll put that in here. So you can see here, there's around 50 people viewing it right now. So we actually even give, and this is actually an interesting metric because we have over 10,000 users and institutional clients using us as well. I actually think even showing people what metrics people are currently interested in looking at right now is value of its own. So what we're looking at right here is us predicting the next difficulty adjustment in real time. So this is the 2016 blocks within this mining epoch, and this is where we currently are. And we see that the next difficulty change is actually going up because we're actually mining faster than the 10-minute average that's coded into Bitcoin's code. And we can see previous adjustments here as well throughout Bitcoin's history. We actually had a very big one. I think this was when it was a couple of days ago, I think. It was one of the biggest ones since the 2021 Bitcoin mining ban. Another one that I really like to show is when I was talking about the distribution of Bitcoin nodes across the world. This is what I was talking about. So here we're seeing the global distribution of nodes. And it's really, really cool. China still has 51 publicly connected nodes running in the country. So that's very interesting. We don't know if they're mining nodes. They could be archival nodes or pruned nodes. But the IP addresses are pointing towards China. And we like to look at the trends of like historical trends of where kind of nodes are being opened and closed. I'm currently in Israel where we have a abysmal amount of nodes being run, myself being one of them.
Germany has an outsized amount of nodes, which surprised me.
Yeah. Germany has a good amount of nodes. And obviously we have the on-chain suite. You know, I don't know if we want to get into there, but each metric has a story of its own as to why people would like to look at it. But we also like to do, for instance, macro charts. So kind of looking at, this was a popular one for a while, but let's see, something like global M2 growth, which is just kind of like looking at, this is basically Bitcoin correlated with global liquidity, which is money being printed by all the central banks around the world. And you can kind of see that there's a correlation. It's, you know, obviously recent price action haven't matched up with global liquidity increasing. But we love to look at these kind of correlations between different assets, different things that people use as a savings, since Bitcoin is a savings technology. This one's very in line with what people are looking at right now. It's also a very popular one right now, but something like gold. Kind of gold has been seen as kind of like a safe haven asset for a very long time, as it's kind of found this run up in price, and you know, people are flocking towards gold. Its price has completely exploded, reaching all time highs over $5,000 per troy ounce, whereas Bitcoin has been kind of like negatively traded in the opposite direction. We love to look at these kind of correlations to kind of understand what's happening, even though, you know, the correlation with gold has been kind of very wishy-washy throughout its years. You can actually see something like Bitcoin versus altcoin correlation heavily geared towards very highly correlated. As you can see, the band is almost, you know, almost like glued to the top, meaning that, you know, if Bitcoin kind of is the market in crypto, which is why I like to tell people that crypto is kind of less of an interesting asset class to look at, because it just follows Bitcoin. Yeah, so this is kind of just like a lot of the different... There's a lot to get in here. ETF tracking. Yeah. I mean, I'm a data nerd as well, and I love building stuff like this. So, I can talk about this all day. There's some really cool stuff in here.
And I got to say, your visuals are extremely well done as well. It's very just intuitive, because it is a lot of data. I mean, just naturally it can be perhaps overwhelming if you don't, you know, slice and dice it in the right way.
Yeah, there's a lot of data here.
It's so much fun. I mean, I could just get lost in this all day. So I encourage everybody to sign up for it. It's really easy. I do, Alon, before we wrap up, I'd love to talk with you a little bit more about how you think about growing your company. I mean, you've already expressed to us that your user growth is organic. You have obviously a really good, solid team right now that's helping you build these tools. How do you think you've added some Bitcoin to your own corporate treasury, but how do you look at the financial mapping of your company? How do you want to grow? And as a Bitcoin founder, I mean, take from your perspective of taking outside funding versus growing internally, how do you think about that?
Yeah, so NewHedge actually did take outside funding from venture capital back in 2023. And so we raised $1 million in our pre-seed, which really helped us with kind of a lot of the structural, architectural data, on-chain database that we needed to build the dashboard and a lot of the metrics that we ran. So we definitely did need help from VC. But I think what's really popular right now with AI and a lot of these products that can come faster to market is that we're kind of less reliant on venture capital now. And because we understand what the customer wants with the help of AI and, you know, our cash flow positive business, we're able to kind of bring those to our customers a lot quicker. So I think a lot of this, you know, raising 18 months or, you know, making sure that you have cash in the bank, you know, for 14 to 18 months to make sure that you can, you know, be prepared for your next raise and to be in this perpetual raising cycle. It's a model that's kind of broken. There's a really good podcast with the All In folks with the Stripe founders about why they've stayed private for so long. And one of the reasons was, as soon as you become a public company, then every quarter you're just, you know, you're less focused on the business, you're less focused on what your customers want, and you're more focused on how the investors are interacting with, you know, financial data and making sure that you're beating quarterly earnings. And, you know, it becomes less stuff that I want to worry about. I understand that that's what investors like to think about. That's where they're taking the bet. But I think if you can, in the beginning, you know, get a selective group of investors, angels or, you know, early stage VCs that are strategic to your mission and can help you with connections. And after that, I think if the business takes off the ground, there's you know, it's less sexy, but steady organic growth, I think, is now like the game that people are playing. Obviously, there's AI companies that just have this outsized growth and they're growing very, very quickly. But I think the beautiful thing about Bitcoin companies is that we usually don't hear about them. And then all of a sudden, 3-4 years later, it's the talk of the town and they've been around for a very, very long time. And I think it's a mix of, you know, taking some early stage capital and understanding what the client wants and having kind of slow, but very steady growth is very healthy for a business.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is I think, you know, the VC model being broken because it kind of forces an outcome for the founder that you either have to be acquired or go public as a exit strategy for the investor getting paid back. But you, I mean, you, Alon, as a founder, is that your dream to be acquired or to go public? Or would you rather retain control of your business? I mean, I think that's one of the first questions a founder should ask themselves is what is my outcome, right?
Right. So look, maybe this comes from background, but, you know, I came from, you know, both my parents are Soviet refugees that left the USSR when it collapsed and didn't have the best understanding of capitalism when they came to the West. So for you know, for someone like me, you know, if I wanted an exit or to do something very, very sexy, maybe Bitcoin data analytics isn't what I'd be working on. But because it's a passion of mine, the best outcome for me is to create a very sustainable business to help Bitcoin along its growth and to hire amazing people along the way that understand the vision. So it was less of this you know, kind of like the Sam Altman, I don't make a lot of money, but I drive this, you know, insane Ferrari down Hollywood Boulevard kind of story that I wanted for myself. And it was more, you know, Bitcoin is something that I'm obsessed with. I think about it all the time. And this is the company that I'd want to work for if I had to make a choice. And I made that choice. And, you know, obviously, I know investors have their own outlook on businesses. But, you know, the best outcome for me is I work for New Hedge for the rest of my life.
Well, I mean, it's great to hear, Alon, and, you know, Lynn and I are fortunate to get to talk to a lot of founders like yourselves in the Bitcoin space. And I mean, I think that's to me what stands out the most is that the commonality seems to be, you know, the mission driven and long term view mindset that founders in the space have. Ironically or not, I think also they are going to be extremely successful businesses, and they're going to be making tons of money, and you know, it's going to just take time, to your point. You know, you got to be resilient and just be focused and patient on growing your business for the right reasons. You mentioned the public versus private approach. One of our first, it reminded me, I don't know about you, Lynn, of one of our first episodes with Bob Burnett. He came from the, you know, upper management of a publicly traded company and now wants to stay private only, building his businesses, to some of the, you know, misaligned incentives that you were mentioning. But anyways, you know, not to get too extended there. I mean, really.
Yeah, but you're completely right. I think if I was thinking about this strictly from that perspective, I don't know why I'd be missing out on adding Ethereum metrics or Solana metrics, because that's what the hype is, and why, you know, it'd be relatively simple with my team of data scientists to add that kind of data and allow that. But that's obviously not the route that we chose, and we chose to keep it more fundamental to, you know, to kind of find the passion within the niche that we like. And this is the one that we like, and it's meeting our customers exactly where they want to be met. So, yeah.
Well, Alon, what would you, I mean, do you have any advice to offer somebody who maybe like yourself got into Bitcoin and is feeling that moral, you know, pull to work in Bitcoin, to be a part of this, to have a greater goal other than working for something else? I mean, what advice would you give to somebody either just on a founder basis or even joining a Bitcoin company?
Yeah, I think, you know, people can talk in kind of like these like very emotional terms, but I think the easiest thing and like very doable that someone listening to this can hopefully do tonight is just create a website, put it on paper, like put it on the internet, say that I am this person. I'm into Bitcoin. This is what I like. Put yourself out there. And a lot of, you know, this is one of the things that I was thinking when I started my first business is, you know, who am I to tell people where they should be learning about Bitcoin? I was kind of thinking, you know, if it's not me, somebody else is going to do it because they're interested in it. And just, you know, kind of like, you know, people that like to make affirmations, one of the things that they say is, you know, to just put it on paper. Cause once you put it on paper, it's out of your mind and it's in the real world. And one of the easiest things now with AI is even if you don't know how to code, even if you're not, you know, programmatically inept, it's very easy to just put yourself out there and make a website, share it around to people and be like, I like Bitcoin, you know, reach out to me if you want some Bitcoin education, if you want some tips, if you want some, you know, great resources that I have, is to just literally just put yourself out there. That's what I did. And it got me here. And if I didn't do that, then it would have been kind of sad because a product like this wouldn't exist. I think a lot of people in the Bitcoin space would have been led down rabbit holes of maybe not Bitcoin only companies that are helping them understand Bitcoin better. They would have been going down rabbit holes of crypto analytics companies that are, you know, selling them Solana 2.0 data or something like that. So, yeah.
Well, I think that's a great place to wrap things up. I mean, I would just encourage listeners to, you know, get into the data, get into everything that the public nature of the Bitcoin blockchain, you know, provides us. You know, I highly encourage people to dig in with their own curiosity and mind. But yeah, Alon, where can people find you? Where would you like to point people to?
Yeah, I'm, again, with like us not doing a lot of marketing, you won't find us unless you actively search for us. So if you type in any kind of Bitcoin related metric, you'll probably find us organically on Google. Click through it. Check us out. NewHedge.io. Waiting to see everyone here. Just for the people who are not familiar, NewHedge gets a lot of traffic and a lot of your favorite Bitcoiners use us. So we have an amazing free tier that gives you amazing wealth of data. So just join it and check out the data for yourself.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really enjoyed this conversation and I'm sure that we'll continue to be in touch and track this. I love your tools. We'll be using it too and really appreciate you bringing this into the Bitcoin world.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. It was a great conversation.